when a nation prepares to change.
I think we should be helping the opposition groups.
In a land of oil.
We'd also be giving them body armour that the British Army no longer needs.
Through non-military means, I authorize the armed forces of the United States to begin a limited military action in Libya.
When others make the decisions.
We will have saved lives, helped Libyans choose their own future.
Decisions that lead to death and destruction.
We would not put ground troops into Libya.
We do look to other nations to increase their ground strike capabilities in order to protect the civilian.
Decisions that lead to war.
This is Afshin Ratansi and Yvonne Ridley joining you from on board HMS President in the heart of the English capital.
And the theme today is In the Firing Line. We look at those people, communities and organisations that are in the crosshairs of others.
And one community that is constantly under fire is the Muslim community, but this filmmaker hopes his new movie will erase ignorance and encourage some bridge building.
Meanwhile, the financial world is focused on the controversy around Dominic Strauss-Kahn. We examine the long-term consequences for him, France and the international community.
All of this and so much more, so stay tuned to the show which rocks the boat. Well, the Muslim community seems to be under a constant barrage of fire these days, despite many initiatives by Western governments and Muslim leaders to combat Islamophobia.
Qasim Basir turned to the silver screen for his inspiration to challenge popular perceptions about Muslims. He joined us recently to talk about his hopes and aims of his new film, Muslim.
So.
My father requested a Muslim roommate.
Get your kufi and put it on your head.
Yes, sir. The kids at school give them a hard enough time.
It's a Muslim name!
You can call me T.
Qasim Basir, you've just entered into the film world by directing your first movie, Muslim, and it's winning awards in America. You've brought it to the UK. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, it is a coming-of-age story of a young man who was born and raised Muslim in America and goes to college in 2001. And we all know what happened in 2001 with September 11th. And it's basically about him trying to find his place in a society where he's not necessarily fitting in the best.
Mm-hmm. And obviously it's very topical. Just a week or so ago, Osama bin Laden was killed. And so people are even more curious about the Muslim world. Do you think this will bring in a new audience?
Sure. I mean, you know, ever since we put this movie out, there's been all these things that keep making it relevant. You know, the whole Ground Zero mosque situation was relevant when we first started premiering at a film festival, so that got us a lot of attention. And then our film was actually released the day Mubarak stepped down in Egypt, and we were actually in Egypt a month before that, like right before the revolution began. So I mean, this is just one of those things where, like, now that you know, we're here, this is something else that's happening, that's making it relevant. But it absolutely makes it relevant.
Well, you're originally from Michigan, people have said, it's a massive community, everything is, you know, they're American and they're Muslim, the multiculturalism there has worked so well. But after Bin Laden was captured, we heard USA being shouted at Ground Zero. Mosques are already being vandalized. Things are getting heightened. The emotions are getting heightened after the killing of Bin Laden.
You know, I haven't been back since, you know, since that's taken place. And I've actually been watching the media from you guys' perspective, which is different than the media at home. So I don't really know what's going on yet. I can imagine, though, I believe that things might get better because symbolically what it means, the fact that he was killed, you know, it's like that was an open wound for the last decade for people, and for some it's something that they feel is justice has been done.
Because many people said that Bin Laden in a way drew America into a trap, Iraq, Afghanistan, Maidan. Right. Do you think the United States will finally become a little bit more isolationist?
Well, I don't know if he drew us into a trap more so than our president at the time drew us into a sort of a losing battle for their own purposes, but we're not going to get into all that. I don't know, it's tough.
Because the characters in your film, how would they respond if the United States withdrew a bit more from their wars?
Well, the characters in the film, they're young people in college. We're not dealing with the whole political aspects of that. And that's the point of this kind of story, is to sort of humanize these people who, in the media and movies, have, for the last decade especially, been demonized to the point where someone who does not know someone is Muslim.
Any plans for your next movie?
Yes, I'm actually writing it now.
And do you want to share the plot with us?
Well, it's I can't really go into it too much. It's called Destined.
Are we going to have another Islamic theme?
No, the next one's not.
So this is a total departure?
Pretty much. I do, however, feel that this movie, I already Muslim, makes it okay for me to have a Muslim character or somebody in the next movies without it being some big issue.
Well, I look forward to seeing it. Thank you very much for coming on board.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Joining us on board HMS President today is Dr. Robert Lambert, co-director of the European Muslim Research Centre based at the University of Exeter.
Bob, you were one of the key speakers and organisers of this European conference held in London about Islamophobia. Why is it on the increase?
For the last 10 years, Muslims in the UK, Muslims across Europe, and increasingly now Muslims in the US are facing very serious violence. Their mosques are being burned down.
It's increased as well since the death of Osama bin Laden.
There has been a spike in the US, and I think John Esposito, professor and researcher in the US, he's been very clear about an increase, an upturn that took place after what was called, if you remember, the so-called Ground Zero mosque debate. I mean, a very pejorative account of a very well-meaning Muslim initiative, but because it was some short distance from Ground Zero, a very pernicious campaign developed. And then we saw a spread of violence across the US, and then I think the figures there are really quite alarming.
Do you think this also has something to do with the way newsrooms in newspapers and television companies actually work? Because there does seem like a barrage every day on some newspapers, certainly in Britain and in France, for instance, that says Muslims are basically to blame for everything.
Yes, I don't think there's much doubt about the connection in terms of increasing anti-Muslim or Islamophobic sentiment. What's harder to establish, but I think we are going some way towards establishing it, is a connection to violence. And by paying close attention to the motives and the activities of individuals who are convicted of violence against mosques. I mean, this is really, I think, groundbreaking research that we need to develop and bring to wider attention.
Of course, the media says that it's not to blame for whipping up a storm whenever a Muslim does end up in court. But that horrendous story recently about a man who decapitated a British woman in Tenerife, he was a Christian, a practicing Christian, had a shrine even in his makeshift home, and yet there was nothing about mad Christian runs amok on Holiday Island.
Oh yes, we can be absolutely sure that had that individual been a Muslim, then newspapers in this country, papers like The Sun, The Star, The Express, you know, would definitely run those kind of headlines. And we know already from the research that we're doing at Exeter that members of the English Defence League, individuals who are convicted of violence against Muslims, you know, this is where they get their view of Muslims. If you ask one of these sometimes very young individuals, sometimes someone who's 17 years old and he's got involved in an attack on a mosque, and you ask him why he's done it, well, it's them Muslims. If you press him on what does he mean by this, he will tell you.
Well,
you know,
thank you very much for coming on board.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Just a few weeks ago, Dominic Strauss-Kahn, Managing Director of the International Monetary Fund, was calling for a new world currency that would challenge the dominance of the dollar and euro and help curb financial instability.
Lindsay German, who has written at length about Dominic Strauss-Kahn, joins us today to talk about the scandal. Lindsay, what are the immediate consequences?
Well, I think obviously his career is over. He's had to resign as head of the IMF, but I think there are much wider implications here, because I think this is part of the way in which now we have a culture where it seems to be acceptable, where a whole number of men in a very rich and powerful position are able to do some of these things. And I think it does bring onto the public agenda the whole question of rape, and we've had Kenneth Clark talking about it in this country as well. I think it does raise the question of what you define as rape and why it happens.
Of course, we can't prejudge this, but extraordinarily, a poll from France, 57% of the population there believe that there's a plot to set up the IMF chief.
Well, he obviously does have a number of enemies, not least the president, Nicolas Sarkozy, who he was tipped to be the major candidate on the left against Sarkozy next year in the presidential elections. But it seems to me there is evidence that there is a bona fide case. I mean, we can't prejudge what the case is, but it's clear something did happen, and I don't see any evidence that this was a setup. And
but
I think
before
it's
the case came up, he had a reputation of being a womaniser.
Well, that's what I think is so shocking about so much of the case, that as soon as this has happened, everybody is now saying, oh yes, we knew that he had a reputation with women. There's a number of women who've now come forward to say that, to complain about the way that he treated them and to allege sexual assault and so on.
Where do you think it took the courage of a young single mother from Guinea to say this when there were other people now coming out of the woodwork saying he has fallen?
Well, one of the women who allegedly was involved in a previous incident with him did say she didn't want to be marked as the woman who made this complaint against a very powerful man. I don't know the exact circumstances of why the woman in New York did, but clearly she was very shocked and distressed by what happened, and she felt that she had to. She also didn't know who he was and just thought he was a guest of the hotel. Maybe that made a difference.
Well, some critics of the IMF would argue that Dominic Strauss-Kahn has been responsible for the deaths of hundreds, perhaps hundreds of millions of people because of austerity cuts and so on that the IMF enforces on countries, and that is a violence in itself. What was your immediate reaction to the IMF element of the story,
well,
quite apart from the personal?
My immediate reaction to both sides of the story is why on earth the Socialist Party in France thought this man was a suitable candidate. He is somebody who obviously has a bad reputation over women, and he is somebody who, as you say, has been imposing austerity in countries like Portugal, Ireland, Greece. And it does seem to me amazing that on either count he's regarded as somebody who should be a beacon of left-wing politics.
Do you think when these candidates are coming forward for these top jobs that their private lives should be scrutinised as well as their professional?
I have to say I don't see why not. I people do have some right to privacy, but if you're going into public life, you also do have the right, you do have to have the expectation that people will want to know some of these things. And in this country, we now have super injunctions, which again, the very rich are able to enforce over what happens in their sex lives, other things they don't want to come out in the open.
Well, at the moment, certainly innocent until proven otherwise, so we watch and wait for this trial with great interest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Well, if you want to know more about today's guests, go on to our website, www.ritansiandridley.com, and don't forget, we're also on Twitter and Facebook.
See you all at the same time, same place next week.